Welcome, everybody. This is Jocelyn with Jocelyn Live. I have Dr. Mari and Karen Reed with me, and you're going to be listening in to a conversation that we're going to be having about what we do. So welcome, guys. Thanks for being with me today.
Hello.
Hi, Joss.
Hey. All right. So each of us does something different. And a lot of people are asking us, so what is it exactly that you guys do? And I feel like we take the three specialties that each of us have and we blend them together to come up with, I think, in our workshops and in our webinars, we come up with this force that we are able to apply to the daily lives and the minds and the spirits and bodies of people. To help them change their lives and live a life that is more authentic or in line with being self-integrated. Dr. Mari is a doctor of psychology. Karen Reed is a healer and also an intuitive, but we call it high sensory perception. And that comes from working with Barbara Brennan. What I do is I am an intuitive. I absolutely do not like to use the word clairvoyant or psychic because it has such a connotation to it of a fortune teller, you know, madam somebody sitting on a corner somewhere. Since I was a little kid, I always had that gift.
So what is the gift, Jocelyn?
That's the gift. My gift is intuition. It's being able to read energy. I mean, that's what I do. I'm an energy reader.
How did you know that you had a gift, or was there a certain point in your life that you suddenly woke up and thought, oh my goodness, I've got this amazing gift, or was it always there, or what's your story behind this?
It's always been there. I've never not had it. Ever since I was a little kid, I just knew things. I never felt like I really fit in. I always felt like I was outside observing everything, and I would watch people talk. And I thought to myself, that isn't anything like what I'm seeing. And I didn't know, obviously, what an energy field was, but I knew that what they were saying wasn't matching the reality of what was going on inside. Or at least I noticed that that was rare, you know, to find somebody that was truly authentic. And those words, obviously, I couldn't use when I was little. But for example, my mom and dad would take me to a party and I'd sit on my mom's lap. And I remember looking at some very close friends of theirs, and I heard a voice tell me that the man was having an affair. And so I turned around and I told my mom that, right? Which is strictly, it was very prohibited. You know, you didn't do things like that, especially not in my family. And I got in trouble for that. Well, they found out a couple of months later that he was. And, you know, later on, my mom asked me, where did I get that? How would I even know what that was? I didn't know. I just shrugged my shoulders. I said, I don't know. I just know it. I see it.
Wow. How old were you at that time?
About 5.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah. But there were always little things that would happen to me. You know, in second grade, I specifically remember seeing my teacher walking toward me and I heard a voice say, she's going to have a car accident. And sure enough, she had a car accident later that week. And I never really understood what that was. I just knew that it was part of me. I thought that everybody had that. I didn't know until I began asking my friends in, you know, my own childlike way. And I was really incapable of being able to communicate what I was talking about. And sometimes I used to feel like this isn't real, like this is a projection, you know, this life is a projection. And, you know, I knew that we could change it. I just didn't understand the whole people would look at me like, I thought, you know what, I need to shut up now and fit in. And so I shut up and I fit in. And I used to think that I was causing a lot of what I saw happening. But as I became a teenager, I started to say to myself, I know what I know. And I began to really trust my gut. And I would go to the library and I would get psychology books and books on anything that had to do with spirituality or metaphysics. And I would take paper bags in those days and we would cover our books and draw all over them. I don't know if you guys did that, but we did. And this was like in the 70s and 80s, right? And so I would cover these library books and I would bring them home and I would read them, and I never did any of my schoolwork. I was really having, you know, trouble understanding why George Washington cut down the cherry tree, because I didn't care. I wanted to understand that. And I started to understand that there is a spirit in our you know, that is existing all around us and in our body. And I began to understand that your mind can create disease. And I got really hung up on that. And I loved that. And I would delve into that kind of psychology. And I didn't want to be a psychologist. I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to help people understand that their disease is caused by their environment, by the people that they have around them, by the thoughts they think, the way that they feel about themselves, because I always was able to see the potential in people, but I didn't understand why they couldn't see their own potential. You know, in their moods, they were very depressed. And so it was important for me to see people and their spirits lifted up. That was as pure as it could get. When I was a kid, I wanted to see people happy, you know, so, Karen, and I'm sure, you know, Mari, you know, this is because I was so sensitive to the energy, I could read the energy and everything coming at me. And I still can, I just have better shields and buffers and, you know, things like that. So, you know, for a long time, I was working in commercial real estate and my ego was really attached to that. And I loved it. And there was definitely a reason for me to do that. I had an absolutely fabulous mentor, somebody that believed in me as a person. And one day we were traveling and he said to me one night, he said, "What is it that you love?" And I thought, all right, you ready for this? Because, you know, I've known you now for 5 years. And I told him, I said, "When I go home, I love reading about spirituality, metaphysics, any kind of religion, beliefs, energy. That is what I love." And he looked at me and he said, "Why?" And I said, "Don't you ever wonder where we came from, why we're here, what consciousness is?" And he said, "No, I don't." And funny thing was, is, you know, we went to our separate hotel rooms and he later said to me about a week later, he said, "I'm interested in this." And he said to me, "You told me that you read tarot cards." And I said, "I do." He said, "Would you read my cards?" And I thought, "Yeah, sure." And it was actually his acceptance, because just having that, this person mentor me and help me get from point C to point A in my life changed my life so radically in the way that I felt about myself, that it was the catalyst for me to begin my work. And then, just as everything would have it, I had an old friend of mine I hadn't talked to for 20 years call me and say to me, "You should be doing this work." You know, she said, "You taught me how to develop my intuitive psychic skills." And I cringed when she said the word psychic. And she said, "You need to be doing this work." I was like, "Yeah, you know what? I'm a commercial broker. Bye, click, done." I didn't want anything to do with her. But it kept rotating in my head. This is what I love. And so I thought about it. And she called me again a week later. And I thought, God, you know, get out of my life. This is not who I am anymore. And she said, "I'm telling you right now, you're going to be doing this work." And literally, it was like everything fell into place within 2 or 3 months. And I began doing readings only full time. And of course, I did some commercial real estate, but I began reading full time. And I was blown away because I had written this down years ago, exactly how I wanted to see it happen. And it was because I was ready. I was in complete alignment with it, that I was able to do it, you know, and commercial real estate helped me get there, but I was able to do it on a full-time basis. And so anyway, that's how it happened for me. And I love it. I mean, I love reading for people. I love reading people's energy, not because I want to predict something, although predictions are really fun, especially when they happen. And typically they do happen, but it's because we can also change what we see. You can change your reality by becoming more in alignment with what it is that you really do want, instead of blindly walking down the path of the life, you know, that you've been leading, being unhappy. You can change these things. And so that's where the part of neuroplasticity came in. I was so interested in medicine, especially when I was in college, but my professors would look at me like, "Okay, so what's your point?" And I thought, the point, it's everything, you know, to understand that you can change things by changing your thinking and changing your feelings and getting out of an environment and using faith and using belief. They looked at me like, there's no place right now for that. And it was so disheartening for me. So, you know, the other side of it was, I just wasn't happy. I was not going to go in and prescribe medication. I was, you know, without even thinking about it. I wanted people to understand that they have something that goes so much deeper than what we see. And I realized that many people were walking around half alive, you know, and half blind.
And how long have you been reading for people now?
I have been reading for people since I was, I'm not going to tell you. So for almost 40 years.
Wow.
39 years. Yep. I got a deck of tarot cards, you know, when I was about 16, and I used to go hide in my bedroom and under the sheets. I mean, I'd read those cards for hours. And then a girlfriend of mine gave me, as a gift, the Rider-Waite deck. And that deck is the deck that I read with, period. I mean, I've got about 45 decks. I collect decks. I like them, right? But that Rider-Waite deck was like magic for me. And when I was 17 years old, my parents were in Paris, and I went down to Hollywood and met an astrologer by the name of Spencer Grendel. And he was the one that said to me, you need to be doing this work. And he said, I want to teach you how to read cards. I remember thinking, okay, what does this mean? And we became friends. And he didn't really teach me how to read cards, but he helped me on my journey. And then there was an older woman that I wound up meeting when I was really young, in my early 20s, one of the best psychics I know, in Southern California. And she's an old Italian woman, and she was like a mother to me. She took me under her wing. But it's sort of one of these things that you learn your own way. Nobody can teach you what an interpretation is, because the cards are only a guide. They're a symbol. And some people will say, well, this is what the magician means, and this is what it has to be. And I say, that's not necessarily true. In some of the cards, they might depict something like a leaf on the ground, and you'll just pick up, you know, something about fall, and you just go from there. And so that's the stream of consciousness, or the energy that you tie into. It isn't necessarily being so stuck on cards, because I don't really need cards. You just know what you know.
I mean, you've read for me a couple of times, and it's many times, and it blows my mind, the accuracy. And you're obviously going beyond just reading cards, because you have described people, you've described places. I mean, I live in New Zealand, you're in America. Things that you couldn't possibly know, you seem to describe. So how do you, was it just a natural thing that suddenly did you start seeing things beyond the cards, or how does that tie in the cards to being able to accurately describe like a person that's around me?
You know, I did, when I was really young, until I was 17, I never used cards. I had this movie screen that comes up in my mind's eye, and it just turns on. And it just goes, and I would watch. You know, I remember when I was with my ex-husband, we were just dating, and we were in Santa Barbara, and he was working for a huge company, right? This guy had been very successful. And we walked out, we got in the car, and I looked at him, and for some reason, I saw the building collapsing. And I turned to him, and I said, this whole thing that he's got going on is going to turn to dust. And he said, no way, this guy has so much money behind him, it'll never happen. And I shrugged my shoulders, and I thought, you know, okay. And about 3 months later, he said, you're not going to believe this, but he was caught in some sort of federal crime. Wow. And the whole thing turned to dust.
Oh, wow.
And it's a movie screen. I don't know any other. It's probably one of the hardest things to describe to anybody. And because people don't understand what it is, right? It is taking the energy that's in the energy field and being able to read it. It's not magic. It's there because someone created it by their thoughts and their feelings. It just exists. And it comes from your ancestry, and it comes from the way that you grew up, and it comes from the way that you downloaded things and experienced things. And the next thing you know, you have carved out a person, and this is what you've got. And the question that I have for most people is this who you want to be? Are these the relationships that you want to have? It's about helping people. It's not just about predicting something for them, because that disempowers them and they become dependent on you. And that's not what you want. You want to empower them, you see? And so, and I think a lot of people are averse to, you know, psychics because, you know, a lot of psychics just make predictions instead of trying to help them. And there are some things that the predictions are absolutely accurate because you're picking up something else. Like, you know, somebody might say, gosh, you know, do you have an uncle, your uncle? I'm looking at this and it doesn't look like he's doing very well with his health. It could be diabetes or something like that. And those are things a person has to be able to go to their uncle and say, you need to be careful with your health, but they won't, because what are they going to say? I went to a reader and she told me this. Most people aren't comfortable doing that. So it is a thing that is always been, you know, hidden, I think, a lot. I have experienced many times in my life, people ignore me and shun me when I've seen them in a restaurant because they didn't know how they were going to tell their husband or their family member how they knew me.
Yeah.
Right. Instead of just saying this, right, this is Jocelyn. Yeah. Instead, you know, it was like, I don't know you. And it used to really hurt me, and it doesn't do that anymore because I realize they don't understand it. So my goal and the way that I think that we all work together is we actually take the mystical and we explain it scientifically, because everything is energy, right? And we know that wherever you put your awareness or wherever you put your thought or energy, what you focus on, that energy follows intention. And so that's why it's not necessarily so mystical, but we can, because we're spiritual beings, we can create mystical experiences through prayer and meditation and what we focus on, right? And so that's why I think that the way that we work together, you know, you working in your healing, Karen, and Mari working in the world of psychology, she sort of has the, you know, the firm hold on, you know, the reality that we exist in and can help guide us when we are lost and we're working through, you know, our issues with our minds and our feelings and trying to align everything, right? And you talk about things in a way, I think, and we should talk about you because we talk about things in a way with you too that are energetic. Like you say to people, you're holding energy in your body. And when you hold energy and thought there, and the energy and thought isn't of the highest vibration because it's negative, it might be negative self-talk, it might be something somebody told you that you keep repeating, these things create dis-ease. And that's what disease is in the body. And so let's talk about you, because what I'm fascinated with is Barbara Brennan and the work that you did under Barbara Brennan for so many years. And I don't know if people know this, but Barbara Brennan was a NASA physicist. And when she was working in Washington, D.C. as a young physicist for NASA, she was in the throes of all the uprising, right? She got into the car with some people that she was working with, and they were African-American. And somebody said, you know, I can't be seen with you or I'll be shot. Barbara was white and they were black. And Barbara just said, wait a second, there's something wrong here. And she began to look into women's rights and civil rights and, you know, gay and lesbian. And everything that she did was, hey, wait a second, we are a body of human beings. And so then she started to study the human energy field just as she was studying the Earth's energy field. And so you've worked under here, and I'd like to hear a little bit about how you met her and how you got into this and where you decided, hey, this is my path and I'm going to embrace this.
Well, when I was a young person, just like you, I had voices in my head and I honestly thought that I was mad. I thought, nobody else can hear these voices. I must be mad. And same thing, like I could see adults speaking, but I was feeling different things. And I just thought, my God, adults are such liars. They say one thing, but I really feel something completely different. And so I spent a lot of my childhood quite confused. And I felt like I was always looking for the truth. So I grew up in a small town, tiny town on a farm, which I feel blessed because I had a really close connection with animals. I felt like I fitted in with the animal kingdom and with nature. People, I felt like I didn't, I was like, okay, I'm definitely not fitting in here. So roll forward, in my early 20s, I worked as a medic officer at Sky City Casino. It was the first casino in New Zealand. And so I would go to all the first aid, I'd be the first aid responder. And there was a man who had a heart attack in the middle of the casino floor. And as he grabbed his chest, and on the way down, he hit his head on the corner of a slot machine and his head cracked open. And so he was bleeding really badly. So when I got there, there was like a pool of blood. He had stopped breathing. He'd started to turn blue. So I started doing CPR. It was a Friday night. It was really busy. And the other medic took ages to arrive. And then there was a crowd of people and I had his wife next to me, like screaming at me, like, don't let him die, don't let him die. And she was screaming, there were all these people and I was doing CPR. The other medic arrived and tilted his head back and started doing the mouth. I'd been doing the mouth and the CPR. And then I saw this cloud of what I can only describe as a cloud of white light come out of his chest and then lift up into the sky. And at that exact moment, I was like, the voice in my head that I'd always had said, he's gone. And I just knew, I had that gut instinctual knew, I was like, okay, he's gone. He's dead. But, you know, there's a lot of people around. So I just kept going with the CPR, but I already knew that he had passed. And it took the ambulance like maybe 25 minutes to arrive. And he was pronounced dead on the way to the hospital. So after that incident, I was like, what the heck was that white cloud that lifted out of him? Like, and nobody else saw it. And I remember saying to the other medic at the time, I said, did you see that? And she goes, no, just keep going. So she didn't see it, but I saw it. And there was this other lady who worked with us, God rest her soul, she passed last year. I said to her, "What? I saw this white cloud come out of this person. What was that?" And she said, "Oh, well, Karen, that's his energy field. That was the moment he died." And I was like, "What's an energy field? What are you talking about?" And so she gave me the book, The Celestine Prophecy, to read. And I read this book.
I remember that book. Yeah.
Amazing. And it describes the electromagnetic fields that are around people and things. And I like had this lightning bolt moment. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm not crazy. This energy thing that I've been sensing my whole life is real. And I became more and more curious. And so I left Sky City Casino as a medic officer. I thought to myself, right, I'm going to go and save the world. So I got on a plane and flew to Australia and I decided to join Greenpeace because I could see that they were, you know, saving whales and dolphins. And I was like, right, I'm going to join them and I'm going to help save the world, which I now know was part of my journey, part of my process. And I was kind of in a rebellious stage at that point in my life. And so Greenpeace helped me live out some of the rebellion that I'd been suppressing. And so it was great for that. And yes, we saved a couple of whales and dolphins on the way. That was good. But the next sort of most important thing that happened to me was I was at the Mind Body Spirit Festival in Sydney and I was working for Greenpeace and we had a stall there and my co-worker went off to the toilet and I was sitting there and this lady in white flowy clothes came up to me and she gave me this postcard and said, put your name on this, you can win a trip away. So I was dead broke at that time and I was like, oh, yeah, I'll put my name down for anything. So put my name down. This lady disappears off into Never Never Land. My friend comes back from the loo and I Mind Body Spirit Festival in Sydney is like huge. So I left my friend there and I was looking for this lady with this postcard. Didn't even know what I'd put my name down for. Up and down, about 10 minutes later, this different lady says to me, oh, that's our postcard. Are you going to go in the drawer? And I was like, oh, yeah. And she said, how did you get that? And I said, oh, the lady in the white flowy clothes came up and gave it to me. And she said, what lady? And so I described her. And the people in the stand had never thought I was crazy. They were like, we've never seen a lady in a white flowy dress. And they said, well, give us the postcard. You're going in the drawer for still don't know what this competition is. Then she looks at the postcard and she says, no, you've got to put your name on it. And I said, no, I have put my name on it. And she says, no, you've got to put your name on it. And I said, no, I have put my name on it. And she said, no, that's my name. And I was like, what? And her name was Karen Reed as well.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, okay, this is crazy. So there were thousands of postcards going into this competition. So I put my thing into the big barrel and then off I toddled back to my Greenpeace stand. Never saw the white lady again. Couple of weeks roll by, I'm back out on the road with Greenpeace, and I get this phone call on my old brick mobile phone, and they're like, oh, it's blah, blah here from the Mind, Body, Spirit Festival. You've won this competition. I'm like, oh, my God. I won the competition. And it was the I won this trip up into North Australia, and it was the first ever WESAC 2000 festival, this massive spiritual festival. So I went along and I learnt energy healing. I learnt about all different types of mystical healings that I'd never, ever heard before. And I read the book there called Hands of Light by Dr. Barbara Ann Brennan. And it was a blue book with hands on it. And I was like, ding, 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 ding. Oh, my goodness. This is a very scientific book. And it explained all of the weird experiences that I'd had. It explained the chakra system. And I was just like, I have to go to the school. So I applied to go to the Barbara Brennan School of Healing. I got in. And this was October 2001, 3 weeks after 9/11. I started at the Barbara Brennan School of Healing. That was 18 years ago. And yeah, I've been a healer ever since.
That's a great story. I love the way that Barbara Brennan can explain energy and all of the occurrences that we talk about spiritually that we can't see through energy, through science.
She calls
it's fascinating.
It is so fascinating. She calls it high sense perception. So normal perception works through the physical body's perceptual organs and nervous system. High sense perception is perception that extends beyond the range of what is considered to be normal. And HSP works through the chakra system. So each chakra has a particular sense. For example, the base chakra, that is about the feeling sense. So most of my clients and most people that I know can feel a bad vibe, good vibe, know if a room that they walk into feels good, bad, or otherwise. Jennifer Lopez, I don't know if you guys watch American Idol, everybody loves it here in New Zealand. She is a judge, or used to be a judge on American Idol, and when she hears a singer-songwriter who's amazing, she gets the goosies. So her hair stands up on her arms. That, to me, is high sense perception. That's beyond the nervous system. That is her having a joyous, amazing, high sense perception of someone who's fantastic, and it's evoking a special feeling inside of her. So that's the base chakra, the first level of the aura, sensing that information.
And isn't that also vibration? Because your voice vibrates, music, everything is vibrating, right? And so a vibration will carry through those radio waves. Isn't that accurate? And then you feel that and you respond to that.
Exactly. Exactly. It's interesting you say radio waves. Like a radio, we can hear things, but we can't actually see with our eyes the band or the wave. So Barbara talks a lot about bioplasma, and bioplasma contains energy consciousness, which is essentially information. So bioplasma is everywhere in the world, and our chakras entrain bioplasma in deep into the chakra. It spirals in, it encounters the seal, which regulates, and then it goes deep and further into our energy systems, which becomes like a sensor. So we're constantly bringing in bioplasma, which is full of information.
So would you liken bioplasma to what Lynn McTaggart calls the energy field around us?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, all right. It's just a different way of putting it. I really, really have always been fascinated with this. I mean, we talked about this the other day, and you know how Marconi, who discovered radio waves, was actually imprisoned, and how many people in history who have discovered things that people see as superstitious, right, have been imprisoned or called crazy.
Totally. And science is constantly evolving. William Reich, because he was an Austrian doctor of medicine and a psychoanalyst, he talks about universal energy and orgone energy, and he was considered mad after a little while. But you know what? He came up with character structures, which is a really amazing way to map defense systems and the energy field, and that's where we enter. Barbara met John Perryakis, who was a student of William Reich. So Barbara's worked with scientists. She is a scientist herself, and it is explainable in terms of science. But we have to be patient with science. We have to kind of catch up. A lot of our thinking is still very Newtonian, and Newtonian science was from the 17th and 18th century, which suggests that we are hard matter. And science has evolved well beyond that. I mean, we're much more than just hard matter.
I agree. I mean, you know, when we really look at it and we know that we're made up of, you know, atoms and molecules, and we're made up of energy. Again, it's energy. And that's where neuroplasticity comes in too. They think that the brain, you can never change your brain. And the truth is that you can change your brain. You can also change your genetic code. You can change anything if you can get yourself into a state which is like meditation for your subconscious mind to accept it. And that's where I think, you know, this all blends so well when we're talking about healing and energy and the subconscious mind and the conscious mind and neuroplasticity. And the next thing you know, you've opened your mind. And that's, you know, one of the other things we have to do is keep an open mind, not foolishly, but keep an open mind to what science is telling us, what metaphysics is telling us, because what I see is many people, a lot of people that live in this world and think that the 3D world is all that exists are not very happy. And there's a lot of brokenness.
I'll just quickly, just on science, just quickly, like physicists are now stating that rather than us being building blocks of matter, is that we are now made up of a universe of an inseparable whole. So we could consider ourselves a vast web of interacting, interweaving probabilities. So like you said, when you read for people, yes, we can read the future, but what we're reading is we're just reading a probability. It's not, nothing is 100% set in concrete. And it's important, if people are having psychic readings, to really come back to themselves and go, yes, a reader might give us a probability, but there's also a million other possibilities here. And we actually have the power to co-create our own realities.
So how do you help resolve that for your client when there is this, I guess, prediction, we'll call it, that has changed because of what they've done, but they don't necessarily connect those two together?
So my belief is that we get blocked. Like I look at how energy flows within the body, and so I can see with my high sense perception where we are blocked. It's mostly from the past. So I spend most of my time taking people back into their childhood and unblocking wounds from the past. And I think that's maybe where we sort of start to have similar ways of doing things, Dr. Murray, is back in childhood, you know, there's unevolved consciousness. And my job is to open up blocks and release trapped, unevolved consciousness and educate it to form new behaviors. So, for example, like if we have a parent that's missing in our childhood, we're probably going to end up with some issues. For example, if dad's not there, then we might form a belief system when we're 6 years old that all men are going to leave me if my father's left me. So a client will come to me and they're like, oh, I can't find a relationship, I can't get a relationship. So rather than future telling who their relationship's going to be, I feel like my job is to go back and clear the block of the pattern that they're recreating. And that is most of the time I'm in childhood with people.
So that's interesting to me, you know, because I live in a different world, right? I live in this, I guess, the 4D world, and I am very interested in alternative ways of seeing things, but that's how I spend my time, right? And so when you say I clear a block, for someone who doesn't understand what that means, what happens? Do you come to their house and knock on their door and touch them?
No way.
What happens?
I never go to people's houses. There's too much energy. I have a clinic. I believe you need to have a safe environment, and I'm certainly not walking around on the street tapping people on the shoulders, telling them about their blocks. I have really strong boundaries. So people must come to the clinic. They must book an appointment. They must fill out health history forms and paperwork, and it's all professional.
But wait, you also have done distance healing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's very powerful and it really works. But speaking to what Dr. Murray asked, you know, the question is, you know, how, in other words, let's start from the beginning. How do you know that there is a block, and what would you call the block, and what do you think that it is made up of?
It's what happens as a child. If we get a fright or a trauma happens or something happens to us, what we do, the first thing we do is we hold our breath. We go, and at that moment, we hold our breath and our energy freezes. So we separate the energy, our thought energy, from our feeling energy in that moment. And usually our feelings freeze and our mind becomes more active and alert and goes on and lives life happily. It takes healing and personal growth work to kind of put ourselves back together, to put the thoughts and feelings back together. So most people are frozen back in time from that first moment when they got a fright or a trauma happened. And what I see is on the unstructured levels of the field, I'll see like dark blobs of energy. On the structures, I might see tiered lines of light. But it's definitely a darker form of energy, and the energy isn't flowing in the system properly. So then we have to do the personal work, because blocks don't go away by themselves. They don't have enough fuel to change. So you have to go to a healer, or you have to do some personal work on yourself or some therapy work to give that block some fuel in order for it to change.
That's where I was going. That's exactly why I asked you that question, is that, you know, some people think that magically, you know, you'll say, this is the block, I'm going to remove it, and their life just changes. It's like a snap of a finger. And I like the fact that you said that it, you know, you're getting to the block and there's some work that still has to be done.
Yes. And this is definitely where you come in, Dr. Mari, because you've said several times, this is not pop psychology. You know, we're not going to fix somebody on a podcast, and we're not necessarily going to fix somebody when we do our workshops. It depends, you know, but there can be major transformation in a lot of work that is done with these things, but people have to do the rest of it. You talk a lot about that. What made you so interested in psychology and to become a doctor of psychology?
Well, you know, I wasn't. This was not the plan for my life at all.
Yes, it was.
somebody else's plan, definitely not mine. Yeah. I grew up being the counselor for my family, and I hated it. Like, I didn't want to be wise. But I was the wisest person in the room, it felt like, a lot of times. So my mom comes from a very large family. There's 19 of them. And my mom's the third oldest of these 19 folks. And so I grew up with my aunts and uncles being my age, or not my age, but very close in age, you know, only a couple years apart and things like that. And so I had these 19 folks, plus all my cousins, and it just seemed like every problem, they came to me. Well, Mari, what do you think? And I'm talking when I was 8, 10, 12, 14. It just seemed like common sense to me. Like whatever problem they presented was just common sense. The solution was easy to me, but it was so profound to them, if that makes sense. And I never could really understand that. So I told myself, probably in high school, I was never going to sit in a room and talk to people about their problems. Like, that was not going to happen. That was not what I wanted to do. I was so adverse to that. So when I went to school, for medicine. I was going to be a pediatric oncologist. And organic chemistry kicked my butt a couple times, and it was my first F ever in my life. And so I'm not really good with failure. And I quit. I was like, okay, well, can't do that because organic chemistry is beyond me. And so I went into law. So that's what I was doing. I was in law, and my daughter passed away. And burying my daughter was like the worst thing in the world that ever could happen to, you know, any human being, to me. And I went into dark, black hole of a place. I call it the dark ages. Like, literally, it was the dark ages. I can't remember what really happened. It's like little glimpses of things, but nothing concrete. But I had a lady named Paula Tanis, who is like my savior. I will call her that because she saved my life, literally. The nurse from the hospital would call and check on me, and I'd stop answering her phone calls. And so she, you know, she left a message and say, hey, if you don't call me within the next 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it was, I'm going to call someone to come get you. Like, you need to go and get some care. And so I called her back and I was like, okay, I don't want you to come to my house. What do I need to do? And she's like, well, I'm going to, you know, hook you up with this lady named Paula Tanis. So long story short, Paula would let me come in her office and say the most ridiculous things. Like, I want to dig my daughter up. I don't care if she's dead. I want her to go home with me. It doesn't matter. And she would say, well, did you bring a shovel? And I would look at her like, what? What? And she's like, and I say, well, I want to go sleep at the cemetery. And she's like, okay, let's go. Grab your pillow and blanket. We'll meet at the cemetery, you know? And just, you know, it's like every time I wanted to be in a dark place, she wouldn't let me be there by myself anyway, you know, she's like, okay, I'm gonna join you. I'm gonna join you in the crazy thoughts and all those fun things, which at the time weren't crazy. They were just desperation and pain. But for me, it was somebody who was willing to hear all of that and join me in it. And so it was I had the best horrible experience. That's what I call it. Like, it was a horrible experience, but I had the best one. I had family and friends who surrounded me. I mean, at my daughter's funeral, you would have thought that everyone in that room was touched, you know, physically by her life. There was probably 200 people there, you know, and she got more flowers than I've gotten in all of my life. So it was just really a lot of support. And I had this Politanis lady. Right after she passed, about a year, maybe a year and a half, we moved to Charlotte, North Carolina. And I got pregnant again, and we had another child. She was actually stillborn. And I called, the first person I called was Paula. And I said, you will not believe this. This is, something's not right with me. Like, life sucks. We lived in Arizona when my first daughter passed away. So we flew Farron, who was her name. We flew Farron to Arizona and buried her next to her sister. And Paula was there. And she was the only person I asked to be there. And she walked me through that tragedy yet again. And I went back to Charlotte feeling like, okay, well, the first time was the worst time. You know, it was totally different experience. And it was just awful. So this second time wasn't as bad, if that makes sense. And so I went on a mission to help women get through these tragedies, because I had a great experience, my first loss, and our second daughter, who was actually stillborn, the hospital didn't call me. Nothing happened. It was just another day for them. And so I went on this mission to help other women. Strange enough, one of our good friends that we had met when we first got to Charlotte, she was pregnant right after Farron passed away, and she lost her son, Ryan. And she was at the same hospital that I had given birth to Farron, and I knew what was going to happen to her, and I knew she wasn't going to have the best horrible experience. So I rushed to the hospital, and I told her all the things that she had to do to get through this. You have to see him, you got to hold him, you got to smell him, you got to take pictures, you got to do all these awful, horrible things with your dead baby so that you can be okay after you bury him. And she fought me about it. She ended up doing it. And she, you know, to this day, we are bonded because of this experience. And so after that, I truly was on the mission. I'm like, okay, how do I get some like education around this so I can formally do this? So that's when I decided to go back to school and went to school for 1,000 years. And
the reluctant doctor of psychology.
Yes.
That is a really fascinating story.
Yeah. And what was interesting about it is that, you know, I went into it to help women and women who've lost kids. And I don't think I've seen maybe but 10 people in my life that have lost children.
Wow.
You know, it was like, that's where God, my source is God. And so that's where God wanted me to be. And he knew how to get me there. And I wouldn't have gone any other way, because I just did not want to sit in a room and talk to people about their problems. I'd done that my whole childhood.
That's really interesting, because I was very reluctant about doing this work too, you know, and it's funny. I just received a text message from a client who said, you know, look, I really don't want anybody to know that I've even talked to a psychic. And, you know, I thought, we don't even use that word. You know, we stay away from it. But, you know, you had that reluctance. I had that reluctance. Karen doesn't really sound like.
No, I was always. I was never reluctant.
God.
Always. I had this crazy voice in my head, and it kept telling me, follow the blue light, follow the blue light. And the blue light happened to be Hands of Light, the book. It's perfectly logical and scientific. And I was like, yes, I want to do this. Yes, this is my life's work. I have had no doubt in my mind ever.
That is really great. I think it's really fascinating, because when I am on the phone all the time with clients, and there are so many people in this world who are actually really interested in energy And, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, mediums and people that have passed over and tapping into that energy and wanting to know about their lives. And that's why it blows me away. And when push comes to shove, they are so fascinated, but it's like their secret fascination because they don't want to talk about it. Psychology is definitely much more accepted. And what's interesting is you were just talking about something that was really traumatic and really tragic.
Yeah.
And a lot of people even stay away from that. You know, they don't want to talk about that over there, you know?
Well, what's interesting about that is that Karen was talking about these blocks that happen in childhood or what have you, and how, you know, they seem like blips on the radar, but really they become blocks for years and years and years. And sitting in my office, I didn't know how the language to use, like the block. I didn't know that language, but that happens all the time in my office. I had a woman who lost a child 44 years prior to seeing me, 44 years. And I couldn't understand why she was so upset with her husband. Like, she was just angry at this man. And they've been married for, you know, 45, 48, 49, almost 50 years. And she had all these affairs and just lots of stuff was going on with them. And finally, I said, when she came to me, and I was at a counseling center that was a Christian practice, right? And so she came and the first thing she said was, "Do not talk to me about any of this Christian stuff." And I said, "Well, that's incongruent." She comes to a Christian counseling center and says, "Don't talk to me about anything Christian." That makes absolutely no sense. But okay. So finally, when I, you know, got to know her a little bit better, I said, "When did you walk away?" And she said, "What?" I said, "When did you walk away? You told me never ever to talk to you about religion, but yet she said something about teaching Vacation Bible School or something like that." And I said, "When did you walk away?" And when I say that was the block, quote unquote, is that the floodgates opened. And that's when she told me that 44 years prior, she had lost the son and no one acknowledged it. She, you know, and back then you had a baby in a separate room and you saw the baby hours later type of thing. So she had her baby in the labor and delivery, you know, labor room or delivery room, and then she never saw him again.
You know, those are some of the most powerful moments, and when we are not allowed to express ourselves and be who we are and grieve. And I think grief is really important. And that's why we talk about, you know, allowing ourselves to grieve for the childhood that we didn't get to have or the parents that we didn't get to have or whatever it was. That allowing grief, not staying in it, but allowing it, is so cathartic and it's so healing. And,
well, I didn't even understand what that block of energy meant. Mm-hmm. And so, like, even sitting with you two, I've learned so much about what I do, mm-hmm. what I do for a living, right? I've done this for 18 years. It's not like I started yesterday, but I've learned how all of these things really are married together, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. how they're not so scary and not so woo-woo in my world. And it's pretty powerful when you marry all these things together.
I think so too. It's funny because I don't, like, I know somebody maybe is blocked, but I don't talk about, I don't know how I talk about it, but it's a little bit different. You know, I'll pick something up and say, "What happened at this time in your life?" And that's when you get, you know, the awakening. They know. And it's almost like I feel like they're begging to be able to express this or let it out or tell somebody. You know, that's what I feel. People want to heal it for the most part.
Over my time, I mean, I can just so clearly see the process of illness occurring in people. If you don't clear the block and open back up your energy center, scientific principle, everything starts in the energy field first, you will create illness if that block isn't taken care of. I mean, I have so many people with breast cancer, like so many people, and I can tell you 99.9% of all of them have an old resentment that from a past lover or partner that they have not let go of. And the breast area in the body, it's about nurturing, it's about loving, it's about, you know, as women we feed the baby, but we also harbor blocks in our breast area of resentments and grief, and if we don't process it and let it out, it does cause illness.
You know what's so interesting about that is that, like I said, I learned so much from you guys. It's incredible. But you know, about 15 years ago, I started treating women with fibromyalgia. And what we do know about fibromyalgia is it's unresolved trauma. So, you know, I hate to say percentages, but I would say almost all of the women that I've seen with fibromyalgia, once we resolve the trauma, magically their fibromyalgia went away. And, you know, we have research that says that, we know this, but why we don't marry all of these things together more often, I'm still puzzled by. I'm not sure what the fear is.
But I also see that with antidepressants, you know, and see it with the people that we work with in workshops who began not being able to handle their lives, but not understanding why, experiencing anxiety, needing to take drugs and alcohol, and then eventually being, you know, tied in knots so much that they go to a doctor and they start taking anti-anxiety medication. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think that you have to do that in order to get a hold of yourself. But I've seen it in you, and I mean, all of us have seen it when we've worked with people, that once they are able to understand the looping, the mental looping that they have created, right? That's what a neural network is, right? You've got a brain in your gut, you've got a brain in your head, and the highway between the two of them is the vagus nerve, and it begins to send communication back and forth between the two, and you begin looping thoughts, right, from past experiences. When people realize that they're just re-experiencing something from the past and they're not living in the moment, I've seen a really great breakthrough for people. I've seen that too. I've witnessed people can wean themselves off antidepressants as they continue to do the work. And they want to do the work. They don't want to be anxious. They don't want to be in pain. It's when they don't even know that they're in pain that, you know, and then they come and they say, well, I'm here. And nobody comes to our workshops because everything's great just to listen to us talk. People are usually there because they want some sort of freedom from something. And typically it's their past and from themselves.
Dr. Murray, I'm just fascinated because I know you work with sports people. It must be so interesting. Like, are they the sports people? Are they like have to win? Or do they have like normal problems like the rest of us have? Like, I'm just fascinated. Do they think differently? Give us the juice, Dr. Murray. They have both.
You know, they have this competitive spirit. I mean, they all have this competitive spirit. There's no way to survive it without a competitive spirit. But they also have normal problems. So they tend to be more complex individuals. And I think that's why I like them. But they're also very driven. So working with them, getting them to move is easier than my non-competitive or non-athletic clients. So yeah, they have the same issues just with a different spin on it.
Because they're so driven is what you're saying.
They're so driven.
What is it that makes them so different, do you think?
It's the will. They have this serious will to, you know, push their bodies to the limit, will to win, will to come out of their comfort zone. I mean, a lot of my athletes have done and moved and been different places because of their sport. They had to. So they're not confined to their normal, you know, family of origin or even area of the world. And so they're just broader thinkers, I think.
I've seen quite a few sports people, and I find them so inspiring. I had the former cricket captain of New Zealand, and he would meditate for hours on end. He'd sit in like a sauna and like sweat and focus, and he would visualize. He would imagine batting. He would imagine getting up to 300 you know, hits or whatever it is. And his visualizations would actually come true. So he would constantly be proving to himself how his mind could control winning the game, or at least for his getting as many runs as he could.
His performance.
Oh, yeah. Such, probably the most focused person I've ever met in my life.
And so that's, you know, I spend time when I'm with teams, we spend time in that meditative state. Of pulling, yes, that's I do some meditation. That's probably the first thing I teach my athletes, actually. And we build on that, the amount of time, the amount of focus. So like one of my football teams right now, we're up to about 20 minutes of just intentioned focus, which is for, you know, I only deal with collegiate athletes. For college kids, it's almost impossible. Like, it's impossible for them to sit still for that long. But I have my guys up to 20 minutes where, you know, the whole goal is to get to an hour of being able to push thoughts away. And I use yoga poses with that. So I have bilateral stimulation, their mind and body, everything's working at the same time. And yeah, it's, I love it.
Very cool. Yeah, that's very well. That's basically what we do with our people. We are doing that, and we're saying you need to be the performer in your own life, right? And so, yeah, that's interesting.
Everybody is their own best guide. You know, everybody has innate wisdom. Everybody is connected to source. And if we could stop looking outside of ourselves for wisdom and start to turn inwards, everything we need is inside of us.
Yes,
I agree.
I truly believe that. I tell clients all the time. You are the expert on you. I am not. I'm the expert on behavioral health, you know, but not on you. I don't know how this is going to apply or how it's going to affect you, but you do. So yeah,
we can read the map to them, but they're still going to drive themselves, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Krishnamurti was the perfect. For me, one of the most perfect spiritual teachers, because he would say, do not follow me. Do not call me your teacher. You are your own teacher. Just become aware. And for me, I've always stuck with that. You are your own best guide. You know better. Once we strip away all the ideas and the dogmas and beliefs and things that are keeping us from hearing that inner guide, I think that that's how you really empower somebody. And it's nice to see people empower themselves and come back and say, this really helped me. Look where I am now. And I think that's the greatest reward for me in doing this work.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks for listening in today. If anybody is interested in joining one of our webinars or getting a consultation with Dr. Mari, Karen, or myself, please go to www.jocelynlive.com. All participants of the Jocelyn Live podcast have been thoroughly vetted and agree to discuss personal information on this podcast. Each participant is offered a referral to therapy if needed. No information given should be considered medical or mental treatment or advice. Thank you all for joining us. If you're interested in joining our podcast or you would like to participate in a podcast, please email info@jocelynlive.com.